You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll find out why it's common to see crows or other birds attacking raptors like hawks.
First, since 1999, the State Department of Natural Resources has been monitoring the spread of chronic wasting disease in the white-tailed deer population in Wisconsin. Since then, the contagious neurological disease has been found in 43 counties in the state.
But new research out of Colorado has found that setting controlled fires might be one of the best ways to help reduce the proteins that cause chronic wasting disease. Mark Zabel is with us now. He's a professor in the Department of Microbiology, Immunology, and Pathology at Colorado State University. He's the associate director of the Prion Research Center. Mark, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into solutions, let's look at the cause of chronic wasting disease. When I think of a disease, I'm usually thinking of a virus or a bacteria or a fungus or something. This is really different. What is the cause?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The cause of chronic wasting disease and other prion diseases is mitigated by a misfolded protein. So this is a pathogen that has no genome. It's simply a misfolded form of a normal protein that all mammals that we've looked at express. And when it misfolds, it becomes toxic and causes neurodegeneration.
And this isn't something that reproduces in the way we usually think of things reproducing. It's just once one of these misfolded proteins, these prions, is there, its neighbors, the ones around it, start going wrong too?
That's correct. So it doesn't replicate using a blueprint like a DNA or an RNA blueprint. We refer to it as template-directed misfolding. So the misfolded form of the protein acts as a seed, and it binds with these normally folded proteins and coerces them to misfold into more of the prion-like state.
So I imagine that there's no immune system response to this. It's not a pathogen the way we'd usually think of it. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. So because this is a just misfolded form of a normal host-encoded protein, our immune system doesn't recognize it as foreign. It's the B cells that make antibodies and the T cells that attack infected cells that are infected with viruses or bacteria are eliminated through negative selection. And so there is no adaptive immune response to the prion.
Before we dig closer into what's going on with deer and chronic wasting disease, what other species have prion diseases like this?
Right. Well, certainly humans. There's several different forms of human prion diseases. Cattle contract bovine spongiform encephalopathy. There's a mink spongiform encephalopathy. There's feline spongiform encephalopathy. There's several different forms, as I said, of the human prion diseases as well.
It seems like this kind of came out of nowhere with deer, though, and spread, I think, faster than in these other species. From what we know, where did chronic wasting disease start?
Well, that's a great question, and my opinion is evolving. So I originally thought, as a lot of people do, that this was a disease with a foci out here in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains, just west of Fort Collins, Colorado, where CSU is. We thought that it was probably a disease contracted by deer that came into contact with sheep being held out at the foothills campus of Colorado State University that had incidental sheep scrapie, so that's the prion disease of sheep. And so we thought that had jumped the species barrier to infect cervids. However, I published a paper, and there's growing evidence to suggest that this might be a spontaneous disease. So most of the cases of chronic wasting disease can be traced back to Fort Collins and movement of game animals from here to Canada and even to the Midwest into Wisconsin, for instance. However, recent research that we published indicates that the normal form of the cervid prion protein seems particularly prone to misfolding, and that would suggest that perhaps CWD is a spontaneous disease that just happened in certain cervid populations. Supporting that idea, recently there were cases of chronic wasting disease discovered in reindeer and moose in Norway. So these are the first cases ever identified in Europe. And these have no connection to cases in Colorado or southern Wyoming, which we had originally thought was the epicenter. So my opinion about this is sort of evolving. One might expect, for instance, that because the deer density is so great and the range is so open in the Midwest, where you are, that the disease may have been discovered there first, and that just wasn't the case. It was discovered out here in the Rocky Mountains, where we have fragmented host ranges and much lower deer densities. So that's a great question. I wish I could answer.
Talking to Mark Zabel about chronic wasting disease. He's a researcher at Colorado State University. This disease, Mark, definitely having an economic impact on states that rely on their deer herds, places like Wisconsin, places out west. Hunting is affected by this. Before we get to possible solutions that are hard to find, let's talk about how it spreads and why it seems to have spread so quickly.
Right. Well, certainly the most efficient way to spread CWD is by direct animal-to-animal contact. So we know that is probably the most efficient way to do it. However, there's certainly mounting experimental evidence to suggest that indirect transmission can occur, too, just by introducing animals to areas that have previously housed infected CWD-infected animals. Without having any direct contact with those previous animals, new animals that are moved onto those areas have contracted disease. Research done by my colleagues here at the Prion Research Center have also shown that indoor housed and experimentally infected animals excrete prions into the urine, saliva, and feces. And if you move their bedding and their water buckets and their feed buckets into rooms with no prior prion exposure, and you have uninfected animals in those rooms, that they too will become prion infected. So we know fomites can transmit that disease as well. And also, if you look at the epidemiology of the disease, mathematical modeling of these outbreaks show that the most accurate models include an indirect component that includes environmental contamination, say plants, feces on the landscape, soil, and those things. So we do know that those different indirect components also contribute to the spread.
And as I understand it, these prions can stay in a place maybe for years and still cause infection, cause the disease. So I want to get into the solution you're looking at now, fire, controlled burns. Can you talk about how this would work?
Right. So, again, this is an idea that we have because we have so few options. We're talking about ranges across about half of the lower 48 states. And so typical remediation strategies won't work. So we're looking at something that could be cost effective and that could be implemented on a wider scale and larger areas. So what I'd like to do is to capitalize on some prescribed burns in different areas with my collaborators at the National Park Service that are scheduled for other purposes, fire mitigation, habitat restoration, and so forth, to see if this might be a viable alternative. So my idea is to take plant, soil, feces samples from areas endemic with CWD and that are scheduled for prescribed burns for other purposes. Let those burns happen, and then as the foliage grows back and the animals are reintroduced in the area, resample those environments to see if the prion loads have decreased.
And these prions are hard to, I guess you can't even really say kill, because they're not really alive. They're really hard to destroy. Does fire even necessarily destroy all these misfolding proteins, these prions?
Yeah, that's a great question. The short answer is yes. So there's one peer-reviewed publication that shows that there was some residual prion infectivity after incineration at 600 degrees Celsius. However, that starting material had a very, very high level of prion contamination. We call this a 10 billion or so lethal dose units. The contamination, the prion loads that we're talking about on the landscape in a natural setting are going to be about a million or more, 10 million fold lower than those. So fire should be able to reduce those prion loads to a very low or maybe even eliminate the loads that we would expect to see on the landscape. So fire is an effective way to greatly reduce the prion loads, especially the loads that we're talking about on the landscape.
And as we wrap up, can you talk about the urgency of doing something to try to slow the spread of chronic wasting disease in U.S. deer?
Well, absolutely. As you pointed out, this is a big industry in your state and in my state. You know, hunting is a $1 billion industry, and this is affecting many deer herds, both wild free-ranging populations and game farms. We have prevalence in our state up to 50%. There's a huge outbreak going on in Arkansas, and you know the continuing problems in Wisconsin. So this is a very serious problem that that needs to have an answer, and that's why we're exploring every opportunity that we can.
Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mark Zabel is a professor in the Department of Microbiology, Immunology, and Pathology at Colorado State University. He's also the associate director of the Prion Research Center. He joined us today to talk about how setting controlled fires in certain forest areas might help reduce a chronic wasting disease among deer.
Here at Central Time, we witness a battle outside our windows regularly between a hawk and a whole bunch of crows. Crows are constantly chasing and dive bombing this hawk that hangs out outside the windows of our office.
We're sure we're not the only ones who see such things, so we called in an expert to find out what's going on. Brian Lenz is director of Bird City, Wisconsin, and the chief scientist at the Western Great Lakes Bird and Bat Observatory. Brian, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, why do we see so many crow-hawk incidents just looking outside our window in our studios?
Well, the behavior you're seeing is called mobbing. It's one of several behaviors where you will see a bird chasing another bird. You either see that when a predator chases prey, if an individual is chasing another bird off of its territory, like a red-winged blackbird chasing another one. You can see mobbing to steal food, or mobbing in the situation that you're talking about, which is where a bird is trying to chase a predator away from its offspring or territory. It's most common in the spring and the summer, but can happen pretty much year-round. The idea here is that several birds will get together and attack a potential predator to drive it away from their offspring. It can happen either when birds are in flight, which is what you're talking about in this instance here, where crows are attacking a hawk, or it can also happen when a predator is perched. If you're a birder, you know that you listen for birds alarm calling and making a big ruckus, because they often have found a perched raptor or owl, so it's a pretty good way for birders to get to see these birds.
And we're seeing exclusively crows who are doing this mobbing behavior that you're talking about. On the one hand, it seems kind of scary for the hawk, but then on the other hand, and this is the ongoing debate in the office, like these crows have to be pretty smart to work together like this to drive away this hawk.
Yeah. You know, they do it because it's effective. It's not always effective, but it usually ends up being effective. The crows and the other birds that do this behavior also know that they're pretty safe if they can get close enough to the raptor, because the smaller bird is almost always more agile. So the raptor really can't catch it, and they tend to stay above and behind. There are actually some pretty funny pictures of smaller birds actually briefly being perched on the back of hawks and eagles as they do this. It's a behavior that makes sense. Otherwise, we wouldn't see it.
Yeah, so are the crows right to be worried about the hawks? Do hawks view young crows as possible prey?
Yes. A lot of a lot of raptors and owls will eat other birds, so they are right to be concerned and drive them off. You do see more than crows doing this behavior. Crows, chickadees, blackbirds, grackles, blue jays, and you can even actually see raptors mobbing other raptors. That will happen too.
What about crows, though? Don't they mob the nests and raid songbirds' nests? So they're kind of a threat, aren't they?
Yeah, crows are actually on both sides of this interaction. They will mob raptors to chase them away, but a lot of those other birds I just mentioned will mob crows to chase the crows away. So the crows know what this feels like on both sides.
Now, I think I've looked up at hawks or other birds being mobbed by smaller birds, and I've had the same thought that I gather is a pretty common question. These hawks are tough. Why don't they fight back instead of just kind of flying away or looping around? Or it seems like they'd be more than a match for these smaller birds.
Well, part of it is the agility I just mentioned. When they're in close proximity like that, the smaller bird has an easier time making, you know, rapid changes in direction, which makes it harder for the bigger bird to catch it. If you thought of yourself trying to catch a chicken, kind of the same thing. You're probably not going to be able to catch the chicken because it's a lot more agile than you are. Hawks and raptors also need to have their prey in front of them and usually surprised. So when the mobbers stay to the back and above, you know, they're away from the talons and the beak, so there's not really a whole lot the hawk can do.
My mom is a diehard birder, so I've grown up seeing this and knowing what it is. But one thing I've never really gotten over is the way a huge flock of crows sounds. I mean, they really kind of raise the roof when they're all cawing and going after something. And I was thinking about the name, even the name, A Murder of Crows. Do you know anything about where that comes from? Does it have anything to do with that noise they make?
You know, that is actually a question that I'm not sure. I'm not sure where the term murder comes from. But it does sound like they are screaming bloody murder.
We're talking to Brian Lenz, director of Bird City, Wisconsin, chief scientist at the Western Great Lakes Bird and Bat Observatory, talking about hawks and crows in Wisconsin, the eternal conflict between them. Let's focus in on hawks a little bit, Brian. What kind of hawks typically inhabit cities or more highly populated areas in a state like Wisconsin?
Well, some of the most common hawk species you will see in urban areas are the Cooper's hawk, and the sharp-shinned hawk, which looks pretty much identical to a Cooper's hawk in the pattern, but is smaller. Red-tailed hawks are common, you know, usually more common around the outskirts of larger urban areas. You might also be lucky and see an American kestrel or peregrine falcon. And if you listen at night, great horned owls are actually also pretty common in urban areas.
I've seen a lot of hawks on my commute home from work sitting on the lampposts, and I guess they're hunting up there. And then, of course, we've got them at the building downtown on campus. Is it common for these birds to nest in tall buildings in city centers?
Some of them will. There's actually a pretty, well, I think he passed away, but there was a pretty famous red-tailed hawk that was nesting on a ledge across from Central Park in New York. So sometimes they will use large buildings. Peregrine falcons are usually the raptor species that people think of as actually nesting on tall buildings.
Apart from nesting, have hawks adapted to human-infested areas in other ways?
One of the most interesting behaviors that you have seen along those lines is with the Cooper's hawk. I think everybody listening has heard at least one bird hit one of their windows before. It actually is a fairly common problem, with window collisions killing 600 million birds a year in the United States. If you started counting now, it would take you 19 years to count to 600 million. So every year that is a large number of birds. And Cooper's hawks have figured this out. So what they will often do, instead of actually fully going and catching birds, is they will drive them off of bird feeders into people's windows and either pick them up on the rebound or fly back and pick them up off the ground.
Wow.
They have adapted to use the windows.
That's crazy that they do that. Do any other hawks have unusual hunting techniques like that?
pretty much everything else around here hunts, I think, as you would probably expect it to. In the southwest United States, there's a bird called a Harris's hawk, and they actually hunt cooperatively. So you'll have a pair out, you know, chasing the prey and working together to catch it. And usually that does not happen with hawks. Usually they hunt on their own.
And speaking of cooperation, let's turn to the crows now. It seems like, from my lay perspective, crows seem to be a very social bird, very smart. Do they coordinate their behavior in a lot of ways, apart from the mobbing we were talking about earlier?
They do. I mean, there's a lot of learning that goes on with crows. So you can see them responding to a single threat the same way, and other birds observe the reaction, and then we'll learn that, you know, something is a threat without maybe having experienced it themselves.
And so, Brian, we've been having this ongoing debate about the last 3 months or so, I want to say, maybe longer. Whose side are you on, the hawks or the crows? And I go kind of back and forth. Do you have one side that you're sort of more naturally sympathetic with?
I like them both. I talk to a lot of people who say, I have bird feeders in my yard, and this Cooper's hawk keeps coming in and picking off my little birds. And I say, well, you're just feeding all of the birds. So I like all birds, and you know, it's just part of the way nature goes.
Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I had a good time.
That was Brian Lenz, director of Bird City, Wisconsin, and the chief scientist at the Western Great Lakes Bird and Bat Observatory. He joined us to talk about why we keep seeing hawks and crows battling outside the Central Time windows.
Coming up, we'll talk about a plan being floated by state lawmakers that would allow all Wisconsin residents to join Badger Care. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. As the battle over healthcare legislation rages on at the nation's capital, some states have started to craft plans of their own that would potentially secure healthcare access to residents if the Affordable Care Act is repealed.
Two Democratic Wisconsin lawmakers have started floating an idea that could extend Badger Care to all state residents. The idea, as it's currently being proposed, would let residents buy into Badger Care as a public option. But the plan would face an uphill battle in the state legislature.
Bobby Peterson joins us now. He's the founder and executive director of ABC for Health, a nonprofit Wisconsin law firm that focuses on healthcare benefits and services. Bobby, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Well, what do we know about this Democratic proposal to expand Badger Care?
Well, it's a concept right now. I think they're, you know, looking to flesh it out a little bit more, but the idea, I believe, is to try and use Badger Care as a base and open it up for other folks to buy into it. The idea behind it, I think, is, you know, there's some merit to it. It's a large pool of folks in the program. There's a lot of children in the program, which means it's less expensive. It blends the risk a little bit better. So conceptually, it needs some work, but I think there's some merit there.
And we should probably say up top that to say that this would face an uphill battle in a Republican-led legislature is an understatement, right?
Yeah, I think it's, snow on a hot August or July day. It's probably not going to last too long. The idea, I mean, it's a decent idea, but it's going to vaporize.
So what is the significance of putting it out there? Because it's not the only plan like this going on in the states. We've seen something similar in California and also other states. So what do you think is the benefit of taking a look at this and looking at what other options might be on the table?
Well, I think because there's going to be Republican opposition to it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad idea. I mean, I actually think it really deserves some discussion. It deserves some investigation because right now we're looking at, you know, a marketplace that's a bit unstable in some ways. We see, you know, the talk about the repeal of the Affordable Care Act and that's stalling, but it's creating a lot of uncertainty out there. And we see a program like Badger Care Plus in Wisconsin that has, 600,000-700,000 people in it, and kids and families, and it's a large pool. And one of the concepts of insurance is pooling. Wisconsin has a Badger Care Plus program that really has, it's kind of a public-private partnership in ways. It's the state of Wisconsin contracting with health plans that have both commercial sides and then Badger Care Plus sides. So it has statewide coverage. So there's really, you know, we've talked about this in the past in different iterations, but it's something worth thinking about.
Well, let's talk about this some more as an idea, as you said. So if the Affordable Care Act were repealed, if, as is projected by the Congressional Budget Office, if many more people were removed from health care, lost their insurance, would this plan, this Democratic plan, potentially cover those people, some of them?
Well, potentially, but there's, you know, like, as we said, it's an uphill battle, so we're talking in theoretical senses now, but as proposed, the state would need to seek a waiver from the federal government to allow people to buy into the program, but it would, I think, give people an opportunity to buy into the program, pay premiums above certain income levels, certainly above the poverty level. And it would be an opportunity to buy into economical and pretty comprehensive coverage. You know, there's a lot of people that criticize programs like Badger Care or Medicaid, and they confuse sort of the funding and the reimbursement levels with actually the quality of the services that are available. It's pretty comprehensive. It includes many services that people need: prescription drugs, access to mental health and behavioral health services, strong coverage for children. So the coverage is great. It's just the reimbursement for providers is kind of low.
Can you tell us how Badger Care first came about? What was its mission?
Well, it was way back during the Thompson administration that the idea was that we started Badger Care Plus as a program to address access to health care coverage for children, and we included their parents, thinking that parents would be a key to making sure we secured more coverage for children. So it was during the Thompson administration. A lot of folks worked on it. Governor Thompson, you know, to his credit, provided some leadership on the issue. Secretary Joe Leanne, others really worked hard on getting the program up and running. It was really a lot of Republican ideas and leadership. Did well. It covered a lot of folks. It provided a lot of security, and it was also a springboard for people who needed help at times, and then they were able to migrate into the private marketplace at times.
Bobby Peterson is with us right now from ABC for Health, where he's the executive director, and we're talking about a new Democratic plan to allow all Wisconsinites to join Badger Care as a public option, especially looking at what would happen if the Affordable Care Act were replaced and repealed. And Badger Care is the state's health care plan for children and low-income residents. And Bobby, California has a similar proposal going on right now. And we said in Wisconsin, the Badger Care for All proposal is not very feasible given the Republican-led legislature, and this is a Democratic plan. But the landscape politically in California is very different. What do you see there?
Well, I think they're proposing a single-payer system in California, and it's a little different than what's proposed here. But, you know, that it's still running into tough sledding. When you talk about health care, it's a big chunk of the economy. A lot of stakeholders, as President Trump has said, it's complicated. And getting people lined up behind any plan is difficult. And anything that requires any radical restructuring of the health care system is going to be a challenge. But we know right now that our current system is fragmented. There are many pathways to coverage. It's very challenging for people who are sick already to identify coverage, identify insurance, switch between the Affordable Care Act and Badger Care Plus. We know that the end result is, you know, a lot of heartache for people with accumulated medical debt, collections activity. And in Wisconsin, the uncompensated care levels, you know, at the start of the Affordable Care Act were about $1.6 billion. They dropped by 2015 down to about $900 million. That was a big drop. So providing people with coverage helps you to reduce uncompensated care, which in some ways lowers the cost of health care for everybody because those costs get spread out through the system and everyone else's health care bills.
We've got a caller right now. Let's go to Terry, who's joining us in Green Bay. Hi, Terry.
Hi, good afternoon, Bobby. Thank you for all your work that you do on this. I fully support this proposal. I mean, besides that, the fact that it's a Republican-controlled legislature, I think we need to shoot for the moon when it comes to getting people accessible, affordable health care. And affordable is the key answer on the Badger Care for All proposal here. Because from what the Legislative Bureau, and I saw the study on this the other day, is that it would save statewide, with the exception of Dane County, 30% on premiums. And then on top of that, there's no deductible. And as Peterson was talking about, Bobby was, this is very comprehensive health care.
Terry, thank you for that. Terry, in favor of this, says when it comes to health care, we need to shoot for the moon. What do you think about what he has to say about it being possibly also less expensive?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that, again, when you look at the concept of insurance and coverage, large-scale pooling is one of the ways to help drive down health care costs, because with large pools, you have purchasing leverage. You know, it's just in healthcare, in some ways, in delivery systems, something bigger is better. You see the mergers and acquisitions of some providers, but Badger Care is one of the biggest kids on the block with many, many people that are already in the program. So that gives you purchasing leverage. And in some ways, for healthcare providers, that's why, you know, the state really, you know, pays less for some of the services because the volume that they have. But I agree with Terry that you know, I mean, I fully support the concept here, and I think we should be looking at it further. It really does, you know, Badger Care does provide great coverage. Another point that people don't think about often with Badger Care or Medicaid programs is that is really enshrined with congressional or constitutional due process of law, and it gives you a right to a fair hearing and review and pretty strong consumer protections. A lot stronger than you have in your traditional insurance. So those are aspects of it that would be great if those elements were mimicked as we allow people to buy into the program, because it could offer people some of the security that they want as well, you know, getting the insurance but having the consumer protections to know that it's there when they need it.
Well, thanks a lot for that call, Terry. And another call here from Deb in Vesper. Deb, hi.
Hi. I would like to say that, you know, this would be a big boom for businesses as well as every resident of Wisconsin. And right now, instead of these people, you know, everybody's complaining, and as they should, between paying $600 and $1,200 a month for an insurance premium. There is no insurance premium for anyone. Your taxes is all supported by tax dollars. I would rather pay an extra $150, $200 a month to have Badger Care for All instead of that premium with the co-pays and all the other stuff, too. Businesses will not have to, it'd be all in the tax dollars generated for everybody.
Okay, Deb, thanks for that. And Bobby, she's enthusiastic about this idea, saying in particular businesses would benefit. Do you see businesses as a group that might be supportive of this kind of idea?
Well, if you opened it up so that if individuals could buy into the Badger Care pool, you could also think about ways of allowing businesses to buy into it as well. And it might not, you know, it could be completely tax supported, or it could be opportunities for businesses to buy in, again, to take advantage of the large pool that helps drive down costs. You're not alone buying a policy, and you know, you're a small business and you have a small pool. I mean, that's kind of the idea behind the marketplace. But Badger Care Plus offers a much larger pool. So if you started opening it up to small businesses, medium-sized businesses, you could have an opportunity to really grow the pool, to have some scale there, and to really help, you know, with efficiencies, help to maintain cost controls, as well as to promote really comprehensive coverage across the state. So, it is an opportunity for businesses, especially small businesses, that struggle with identifying coverage for their employees.
Bobby Peterson is with us right now. He's the founder and executive director of ABC for Health Incorporated. We're talking about a new Democratic plan that would allow all Wisconsinites to join Badger Care as a public option. That's the state's health care plan for children and low-income residents.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this idea? Do you think like a plan like this would work in Wisconsin? Do you think lawmakers could get on board? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation about the Democratic proposal to extend Badger Care to all Wisconsin residents. Bobby Peterson's with us. He's the founder and executive director of ABC for Health, Inc.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think that all Wisconsin residents should be able to join Badger Care? Would you join the public option if it was available, or do you have concerns? Call 800-642-1234. 1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Let's go back to our callers. We have John joining us in Eau Claire. John, hi.
Hi. How's it going today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a question. Your guest made a mention that with additional people actually having coverage, that'll lower the number of people that get coverage without paying. Now, in response, they should actually lower hospital bills because they're not covering so many unpaid bills. Has that actually happened with Affordable Care Act?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I can respond to that. I think, you know, what we've seen, and when we've analyzed some of the data out there, we looked at the 2013, and we saw that uncompensated care for Wisconsin hospitals was a bit over nearly $1.6 billion. That includes charity care for people that had no coverage that qualified for charity care, or bad debt, people that couldn't pay their bills and it ended up being written off as bad debt. But by 2015, when the Affordable Care Act started to become more widespread, that number had dropped to just over $900 million, almost $1 billion. So that was a pretty big drop. So we saw that covering more people reduces uncompensated care. And I think, you know, your point, this does affect healthcare costs, because if you're reducing that uncompensated care, if you're thinking about that big pot of money at the end of the day that goes to charity care or bad debt, where does that money go? It doesn't just disappear. It gets, you know, in some ways socialized and redistributed into everybody else's health care bill or health insurance. So providing coverage for people is a really smart, cost-effective way in some ways to not pay for it at the back end of the system, but pay for it up front and getting people the coverage they need and deserve.
Thanks a lot for that, John. And Bobby, looking at issues of a stable marketplace, we've just seen, I think it's Blue Cross drawing out of the marketplace in Wisconsin because they say it's too unstable. So what's happening there that's destabilizing?
Well, I think it's partly because of the fact that the risk that's out there, I think most businesses and insurance companies in particular look for stability, and the marketplace right now is starting to become less stable. Although Wisconsin is doing better than some states, the instability in the marketplace, the lack of the security that the feds are going to provide, premium support and subsidies and market stabilization funds, I mean, it's all up in the air. So that really presents a lot of uncertainty for businesses, and they're saying it's just too much of the wild, wild west right now. We're not going to dip into it.
But some of this instability predated the election.
Sure, some of it was part of the corrections that needed to occur with the Affordable Care Act, and you know, we're talking about expanding Badger Care Plus to everybody else, but we also know that, you know, the fundamentals of the Affordable Care Act were pretty good for most people, and that I think the majority of the public out there views repair of some of the problems, things that we can do to stabilize the market, making sure it's more available for people. That's probably a better direction to go. So, and we would support that as well.
Let's go back to our callers now. We've got George joining us in Nakusa. George, hi.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Uh-huh, loud and clear. What did you want to add?
Great. So my concern is, you know, that as I understand it, there aren't actually lots of providers lining up to take care of people with Badger Care insurance. As you mentioned, the reimbursement is fairly low for providers. And, you know, you can enroll as many as you want, and we just don't have the providers who are interested in taking care of those patients. And the second issue is that Badger Care really doesn't allow patients to have any skin in the game. So with commercial insurance, other insurance, we do try to ration health insurance because we do have a copay, we have a deductible, and we try to be smart about the way we use our health care dollars. When you have carte blanche and a blank check and you have insurance and there's no copay, no deductibles, there's just no barrier, there's no gatekeeper to control how we spend health care dollars either.
George, thanks for that. A couple of interesting points there from George, saying the reimbursement the rate is low, as you pointed out earlier, Bobby, so providers aren't always so keen on taking Badger Pair patients, and also his last point there. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, to the first one, I think that this is, you know, it's an interesting concept, but when you start large-scale pooling, you create a market that's almost too large to turn away from, and we see that with Medicare. Providers complain about Medicare reimbursement, but it is so pervasive across the state. So many people are in the program that providers could not really survive if they didn't take Medicare. Badger Care and the Medicaid program can get to the same point as it gains size and strength. And this is part of, large-scale pooling, spreading the risk, but will also provide an opportunity to control costs. Providers that would say, we're not going to take Medicaid or Badger Care at all, would be in a situation turning their backs on a very, very large market of people. And so that could be, you know, potentially a bit of a problem.
And what about that that skin in the game comment George made, that there's a blank check and there's no copay pay, then people might abuse the health insurance?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, as I understood the proposal, people were actually going to be buying into Badger Care Plus. So the idea, at least as proposed, would people would have skin in the game because they'd be paying for premiums. It wouldn't be structured necessarily just like the Badger Care program for people, you know, below the poverty line, and maybe they don't have the resources, or there are other ways they can make, you know, contributions. But got a fire truck going by here. So there's ways that people can participate. But this proposal does include, you know, some skin in the game by people actually buying into the program and making premium contributions.
Well, Bobby, we're starting to wrap up here. And as we started the conversation by saying this is a Democratic proposal, it does not have a good chance, if any chance realistically, of going forward. But what do you think conversations like this do to inform our ideas about health care? And in just a couple seconds left.
I mean, I think it's really important. I think people need to think about these issues critically, talk to their legislators, and, you know, push these ideas. And that's how they happen. So collective voices, amplifying voices, these things can happen as long as people, you know, get a chance to talk about them, think about them, and talk to their legislators about them.
Bobby, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're welcome.
Bobby Peterson is the founder and executive director of ABC for Health, Inc., a nonprofit Wisconsin law firm that focuses on healthcare benefits and services. And he was with us there to talk about a proposal being floated by Wisconsin Democrats that would extend the state's Badger Care plan to all state residents.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, a recent survey finds that Wisconsin drivers are among the rudest in the nation. We'll check in with you about your experiences on Wisconsin roads.
We get the latest in Wisconsin news, including a vote on university funding that has some campuses at odds with one another.
And on Food Friday, we get the scoop about how to make healthy and delicious Indian food at home.
That's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.